Thanks a lot to the organizers for the invitation and the opportunity to give this talk today. I'm very happy to be back at PI. Actually, I was here in the 2012, so 7 years ago. And as far as I can tell, things look even better. So my best wishes for this institute in the years to come. And as Matt has mentioned, indeed, I will talk about N equal 4 super Young Mills and type 2B supergravity at one loop. And the things I'm going to say are based on joint work with James Drummond at the University of Southampton, Paul Heslop, the University of Durham, and then Inek Paul, which is James' students at Southampton. during this talk, I will open several parentheses on technical details because I think technical details might be important. But I will be very clear when I do this so that I don't get everybody lost. The minimum goal I would like to achieve for everybody is to explain how to construct at one loop the four-point amplitude of the superconformal primary in the graviton multiplet of type 2B supergravity, which will be denoted like phi 2222 later in the talk. As a slogan, let me point that this quantity is far from calculable in supergravity. Indeed, it remains a challenge to do such a computation. On the other hand, everybody in this room should be interested in this quantity because, especially at one loop, this is a true quantum gravity effect within the framework of ADS-CFT. And I think I don't have to motivate too much why quantum gravity is interesting. So instead of doing the direct computation, what I will do will be to bootstrap the answer from novel CFT data in N equal 4 super Young Mills that we have been extracting with James, Paul, and Inek. During the past 2 years, relying on a result of Leonardo Rastelli and Xinan Zhou for three-level correlators, which I will also explain in detail, okay? So let me remind a little bit of the framework. According to Maldacena, SUN N equal 4 super Young Mills is dual not just to supergravity, but to superstrings on ADS5 times S5. The coupling of the two theories are identified, and then the radius of ADS5 and DS5 is related to the tooth coupling and alpha prime in that way. Quite soon after the proposal, it was realized that there is a very interesting regime for both theories. And this is the regime in which the tooth coupling is large and the number of colors is also large. In this regime, you pick your favorite gauge theory observable, and that essentially localizes on classical solution of the equation of motion of supergravity. And then it gets its own 1 over n expansion purely in supergravity. And as the intuition about the string spectrum suggests, each one of these 1 over n correction is dressed up by alpha prime correction, which in terms of the gauge theory turned out to be a correction over the lambda to the minus 1 half, as the relation between the radius of ADS and lambda 2 suggests. So in the end, what's happening in the gauge theory side is that your observable now admits a double expansion in 1 over n and lambda to the minus 1 half. So the observable I'm going to be interested in is a four-point function, and the operator I'm going to be interested in will be defined shortly. In fact, let me remind also that as soon after the proposal, Witten realized that single particle states in supergravity, so these are the Kaluza-Klein modes of type 2B supergravity in 10 dimension when I compactify on the S5, they should be dual to protect the DAF-BPS operator in the gauge theory. So protected FBPS operator will be denoted by calligraphic O, and these are essentially given by taking a single trace over a string of elementary field of the N equal 4 multiplet. The number of this field will be schematically denoted by P, and P will be the charge of the FBPS operator. So Witten's statement was that this protected FBPS operator should be dual to the single particle state at leading N, okay? Actually, today I will also show you something more. I will tell you what's the precise basis in the gauge theory, which is dual to the basis of single particle states in supergravity. But even if you didn't know that, you could just go ahead in supergravity and compute gauge theory observable according to the rules of ADS-CFT. In particular, computing boundary correlators in terms of Witten diagrams in the bulk. And this is what people start doing quite a few time ago. In particular, this gentleman in the first line. But after a little bit of work, it becomes soon clear that this computation are very, very difficult. And in fact, the list of things that was computed this way is not so large. What was understood, for example, was the set of tripling function of protected half BPS operator. This corresponds to 1 over n bulk vertices, and this was fully understood, modulo a subtlety that we'll also clarify. And then a famous paper by Rocciuno and Frolov breaks down the scalar quartic couplings of type 2b supergravity on ADS5. And that Lagrangian takes about 10 pages to be written down. And out of that, people were able to compute the first correlator, which is also denoted as next to next to extremal, and then two other 3.4-point functions, which are the 3333 and 4444. So essentially, when you do all this computation, what happens is that you arrange it a little bit in terms of Witten diagram, and there are three types of Witten diagrams that shows up. The disconnected diagrams, contact diagrams, the second one, and then three-level diagrams in which you can exchange, at least in this framework, a scalar or a gauge fit. Okay? On the other hand, there should be a catch, because n equal 4 super AMLs is a very constrained superconformal field theory. So even though the computation at the beginning is very messy, the final result should be simple, or at least should make manifest a little bit of the symmetry of the theory, because it has a lot of symmetry. And in fact, this is what happened a little bit in this simple computation. But my point is that we really know a lot more in the gauge theory. In fact, Sokachev and collaborator proved a theorem called partial non-renormalization theorem, stating that the four-point function of half BPS operator admits the splitting into free theory plus a second line, which would be a truly dynamical quantity, which is again given by a kinematical polynomial that I'm going to explain in the next slide, okay? Times a dynamical function h, calligraphic h, which depends on the cross ratio on space-time, uv, and on the S5, sigma tau. I hope everybody's familiar with cross ratios, but I will also define them. Now, on top of this statement, one should add the fact that we are studying a superconformal field theory. So the statement about the operator product expansion, meaning that whenever two operators get close together, we can substitute their product in any correlation function with a weighted sum over all the operator O, which are quantum numbers compatible with the external operator phi pi phi pj, and the sum is weighted essentially by the tripling function of the operator O with the external operators. Now, in n equal 4, if O is also a protected operator, this tripling function doesn't depend at all on the coupling. So intuitively, it's something that I should be able to find in free theory. That means that this function h is essentially generated by exchanging of operators which are non-protected in terms of n equal 4. These non-protected operators will be called later on as long operators. So the right question to ask in order to find this function and then find the full correlation function is, how much do we know about these long operators? Now, in the next slide, I'm going to open some parentheses, okay, which explain a little bit more the details of the partial non-renormalization theorem, or at least gives an argument for it. But the punchline of what I'm going to say is that if at the end of the day someone comes to you and hands you the tripling function of these long operators, which are denoted by k, the full ones, okay, then the OPE predicts that the function h is just given by this sum here, where the other two ingredients are the conformal block on space-time and the conformal block on the S5. And this is a polynomial in sigma tau, so no big deal. The conformal block on space-time is the usual conformal block that you have studied in ordinary courses of CFTs. And the important thing to remind about it is that it has an analytic expansion in U and 1 minus V. And in the small U limit, the leading term is given by U to the capital T, which is the twist of the operator that is exchanged. And the twist is given by the combination of the dimension minus the spin. Okay? And this is an exact statement. Okay? So let's go back a little bit.
Francesco?
Yes?
Do these C coefficients have 1 over n expansion?
These coefficients are, in principle here, are the true coefficients, so it depends on lambda and n. Okay? So if someone comes to you and gives them, then h is just given by this sum. One should be able to do this sum and give h as a function of two coupling and n. We will just study n because we are in supergravity. If we want to use the lambda tuff expansion, we'll have to do a little bit more work, and I will mention that at the very end. Okay? So let's go back a little bit at the beginning of the partial normalization theorem. So I guess everybody's familiar with free theory, but maybe not everybody's familiar with n equal 4 free theory. So let me state in words what's happening. So for every operator, external operator phi, I will draw a blob with p legs, where p is the charge of the operator phi p. Okay? And then the diagrammatic expansion of free theory n equal 4 just amounts to consider all possible topologies in which the blobs are linked in different ways, and there is no line connecting the same blob. Okay? For every line, as it's usual in free theory, we write a propagator, and in this case, since it's n equal 4, it will be a superpropagator Gij. So in the end, a diagram that I drawn there, for example, is going to be a string of propagators, and there is usually a better way to write it by pulling out a prefactor of propagators that will be just kinematics and will also be there. So I will factor it out. So in the convention in which the charge of the operator at position 4 minus the charge of the operator at position 3, which is this P43, is bigger or equal than P21 and both are bigger or equal than 0, then the prefactor is just given by this line. And when you pull it out, what you're left with is always the same ratio of superpropagators. And in fact, this we should be familiar with. It's going to be all given by the ratio of space-time and internal space cross ratio. So in particular, G13, G24 over G12, G34 is given by U sigma. And the other is given by U tau over V. Now, you can refine a little bit this diagrammatic expansion introducing a parameter gamma, meaning that I will cluster a little bit of diagrams together. And gamma is the parameter that counts the number of legs that goes from partition 1, 2 to 3, 4. So in this diagram here, for example, if we count is 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. And in this way, there will be more diagrams with 6 legs that goes from 1, 2, 3, 4. And in fact, the extension of this parameter gamma goes from P43 up to the minimum of P1 plus P2, P3 plus P4, which are my external operators, which are the charges of my external operators. So, this is an example of free theory four-point function then, but as we know, four-point function transform under the tensor product of the conformal group at the insertion points. So when this happens, the group theoretical way to deal with is to decompose the function in terms of eigenfunction of this of the associated Casimir. And if this was an ordinary conformal field theory, then the associated Casimir will be the standard Casimir that you're familiar with. Now we're having supersymmetry, so the Casimir will become a super Casimir operator. And a way to think about a super block is just as you think about a super multiplet, will be just to arrange a number of ordinary conformal blocks into a multiplet and call it the super multiplet. I won't take that point of view. That is was taken by other people, and it's actually very useful even in the chiral algebra community. Instead, I will take a more group theoretical point of view, and I will label a superconformal blocks by a super Young tableau of GL2/2. Okay? Now, if you're wondering what is GL2/2, actually GL2/2 times another GL2/2, it's the maximal subgroup of GL4/4, and GL4/4 is the complexification of SU2,2/4, which is the supergroup of n equal 4. Okay? I told you before that we're protected operator and non-protected operator. Now, the non-protected operator, which are long, they are labeled by a hook-shaped Young tableau. Okay? Hook-shaped means that there will always be a block of boxes, square block of boxes, and then there will be a Young tableau attached from the right and a Young tableau attached from below. Okay? Now, for long operators, there is always a 2x2 array of boxes, and then there are the Young tableaus attached from right and from below. For protected operator, there is less boxes, less blue boxes. So for semi-short and quarter BPS, there is one box. And for RBPS, there is no box at all. Okay? Every time that we have a Young tableau, we also should specify into how many rows I'm going to embed my Young tableau. And in fact, the number of rows is given by that parameter gamma that I introduced before. Okay? So in fact, now the parameter gamma acquires a meaning. Before, it was counting the legs going from partition 1, 2 to 3, 4. And in fact, discounting the twist of the minimum operator that I can exchange in the diagram, which is given by the alpha VPS operator with empty Young tableau, okay? And so in the example I gave before, 6 was the twist of the alpha VPS operator, the first operator that is exchanged in the diagram, and it's an alpha VPS operator. Of course, in the diagram, I exchange more operators, but they will come again with the superconformal block expansion. Now, I'm not going to write the superconformal Casimir, since we'd be a little bit involved, but I want to mention that it acquires a very nice form when you introduce variable x1, x2, and y1, y2. And this variable essentially symmetrizes the ordinary cross ratios. And these variables, and together with the super Young tableau notation, they're inspired by work back in the days by Paul Heslop and Howe on analytic superspace. And then these works were generalized to GLM/N in this very nice paper by Paul and his student Reza Dubari, 1508, which I invite everybody to read. So when you introduce the variable x and y, what happens is that your superconformal Casimir essentially becomes writable in terms of simple hypergeometric operators. So what you do is that you try to solve for the eigenfunction of that operators, writing down an ansatz in which you sum over super sure polynomials, running over Young tableau that contains your Young tableau data that you're interested in, okay? And the task is to find this coefficient R, which depends on the charges, etc. And then Paul also noticed that you can, once you find this R, you can resum the sum into a very nice determinantal formula that I've written on the right-hand side, in which precisely what is showing up are the hypergeometric function and then some extra ingredient. And the important thing to know is that the hypergeometric function f, they will have positive arguments, okay? So this will mean that there will be infinite series in the variable x1, x2. On the other hand, the hypergeometric type g, they will have negative arguments, so in fact this will become polynomial in y's, the y's. This formula deals with all cases, so for it's determined, as you can see from the notation, by the Young tableau, so it works for half BPS, quarter BPS, semi-short, and long operators. In fact, one can unpack a little bit this formula, and when you unpack it, what happens is that it boils down to three types of structure: a constant, a single variable function, and a double variable function. If you're familiar with n equal 4 or the superconformal world identity, this is precisely the same content of the superconformal world identity that was solved time ago by Dolan and Osborne, just that here we are finding it through a more algebraic group theoretical way. Now it's important to know that the contribution of a semi-short to a single variable, a double variable function, depends on the Young tableau. So in general, it's false that the semi-short don't have a double variable contribution. But instead, what is always true is that the long operators, they are very much simple. So they have only one contribution, which depends on 4 variables in the calligraphic function D. They have no S and no constant. Okay? And in fact, when you specify the determinantal formula for the corresponding Young tableau, it factorizes once again. And it factorizes into 2 determinants, and we recognize in the first determinant the ordinary conformal block, and in the second determinant the SU4 conformal block. Okay? And here, for convenience, I also translated the dictionary between the Young tableau and the usual twist and spin, and the Dinking label of the SU4 representation ABA with the label of the Young tableau. Okay? So once we have this function, someone comes to you and gives you another function which is related to a conformal, a 4-point function, what you can do is, is to expand that function. For example, if I come to you and I give you free theory, then what you will do, you will expand free theory in terms of just the basis of function that I'm giving you. And for each base element, you will give me a coefficient that I'm calling there A. Okay? Now this A is not directly CFT data, because if there is more than one operator exchanged for that given twist and spin, it's secretly a sum, as it was the sum that I told you before in the previous slide. So what does that mean? That means that in general, in order to find the true CFT data, so the three-point function, I will have to do more work, and I will have to solve in general in a mixing problem, which will be a function that inputting the coefficient A will spit out the three-point function C's. Now, I hope that I convince you that the partial normalization theorem can be seen as a consequence of the group theoretic structure of the superconformal group, and that whatever I'm left with, which is not related to protected operators, is in free theory. And the new stuff that we will be interested in, which is generically dynamics, will be in this function H. So dynamics will mean that this function H, differently from free theory, will be allowed to have logarithmic discontinuities. So in the next slides, I will answer the question, how much do we know about the long operators that can eventually be exchanged at in n equal 4 in this supergravity regime?
So in the free theory, you also have this exchange of k's or not?
Yes, you also have this exchange of k's.
Yes.
And in fact, I exchange k's. I will explain this in the next slide indeed. So as Lorenzo was pointing at, the idea is let's think what are these long operators that I'm going to exchange in the diagrams. So I will first make a simple consideration, then I will make more complicated consideration. So the simple consideration is this, is that in the supergravity regime there are no stringy states, those are gone. So the only thing I'm left with in supergravity then are these single particle states. What I can build are bound states of these single particle states. And it's intuitive that the lighter one will be the one in which I have just two constituents, so two single particle states. This translates in the gauge theory, saying that I will have to consider just double trace operator. So let's formalize a little bit better this intuition, and let's expand in 1 over n the three-point function, okay? So for a double trace operator, the three-point function with the external operator, in fact, has an order one term, and then terms which are suppressed. This won't happen for multi-trace operator with traces bigger than 2. They will be directly suppressed. What does that mean? It means that when I take the n equal to infinity limit, I am left with a free theory in which I have single particle states and double particle states in just free. Okay? So the diagrams in which I see this are precisely the diagrams in which the operator 1, 2, and 3, 4 are disconnected. So in the class of diagram that is disconnected, I will see precisely this a first instance of double trace operator being exchanged. But since now I'm at leading n, and I'm in free theory, I can count the dimension of this double trace operator just adding the dimension of these constituents. So in the case of k that I've written there for simplicity, the dimension of k will be just p plus q because I'm in free theory, okay? This means that when I see a four-point function with generic charges, p1, p2, p3, p4, the threshold for exchange of a double trace operator is precisely the max between p1 plus p2 and p3 plus p4. In fact, remember this formula here. So if I'm not considering the max, then one of the two three-point functions is not there. Now let's go at order 1 over n squared. Yes?
So what are we bounding precisely the sum p plus q?
So here I'm just making an example. When I take n equal to infinity, so in the strict large n limit, the dimension of k is just given by the sum p plus q. So if I'm considering here a four-point function with generic charges, I will have a structure which is of this type, okay? So k will have p plus q, but p plus q has to be common to p1 plus p2 and p3 plus p4.
Double trace towers,
and yes.
some operator with dimension plus 2, plus 4.
Yeah, indeed. You can hear the sum is over all double trace operator whose minimum dimension is max between p plus 1 plus p plus 2. Okay? So now that we are a strict large limit n equal to infinity, now we go to 1 over n squared. So the theory is interacting. That means that single particle state were protected. So they remain protected, but the double trace operator are non-protected, so they are long. So in order to stay there, they need to acquire a binding energy in terms of supergravity. This means that in the gauge theory, they will acquire an anomalous dimension eta, And so I'm expanding the twist of the operator that is exchanged into little t, which is an integer, as I told you before, for example, p plus q, and then a term which is 1 over n squared, the anomalous dimension, which would be a non-trivial function of twist and spin. Now, if we plug into the exact statement of the OPE, the expansion of the function c and t, what happens is that I predict that the 1 over n squared, a term with a logarithmic discontinuity, multiplying a non-trivial function, okay, because there are conformal blocks, and there is new data in this function, precisely the anomalous dimension is entering. But notice that again there are the leading three-point function. So again, this function will have a threshold which is the max between p1 plus p2 and p3 plus p4. Okay. So now, if you're a professor, you pick your favorite grad student at lunch. You explain a little bit of this, and then you ask him the following task: find a function under the 1 over n squared with this feature of the threshold, which transform nicely under as it should be under crossing. And then, which has some extra property that I can explain after lunch, okay? This is what Leonardo did with the Xinan in 2016. And they came up with a beautiful answer, which is written in Mellie space. And the beautiful answer is precisely the 1 over n squared most general three-point function that can be written down, okay? The other smart argument that I was meant to say before are the flat space-time limit of Penedones and the Mellie space. The use of Mellie space. So for those of you that don't know Mellie space is just a smart way of rewriting series. So if u and v are the variable of your series, and z and w are the Mellie variable, which are conjugated to them, then what happens is that simple poles in z and w gives you term monomials in the series u and v, double poles gives you logs and monomials, and so on and so forth. Now, just to make the point, since I insisted a little bit on the max between p1 plus p2 and p3 plus p4, so here what happens is that the argument of the gamma function, the first one, the first line here, precisely overlap at the max of p1 plus p2, p3 plus p4, and there is where I get the double poles, okay? Then the other gamma function are fixed essentially by crossing, and these are also known as the Mach gamma function. And then the other smart argument tells you that whatever you're left, the freedom you're left with in this function can just be that of a rational function in the Mellin variables. And then Leonardo and Xinan were able to fix that rational function to this very compact form which is written there. Now you should contrast in your mind this very nice form with the 10 pages Lagrangian of the scalar quartic coupling of type 2b supergravity that Arucino and Frohlich wrote down. So this is a incredibly compact result compared to that very messy expression. So here, in fact, a lot of symmetries are manifest, so we are just considering the function h, not just the full correlator. We are making manifest some very smart argument by Penedones using Mellie space. But you start realizing how cool is this function when you see the interplay between this and free theory. In fact, I just told you that the most general four-point function is given by free theory, plus this utter the 1 over squared function of Rastelli and Zhou. And now you should start thinking a little bit, because free theory by definition is free, so sees all the operators, so in particular sees also the stringy states. But we are in the supergravity regime, so stringy states should not be there. So that means that in the diagram there should be no exchange of stringy states. And in fact, this was understood time ago at the very beginning of ADS-CFT, where this was put forward as a supporting the conjecture. But actually, there are more non-trivial statements about the function of Leonardo and Xinan. And what happened is that not just stringy states don't show up here, so there is a non-trivial cancellation between free theory and this function h. But precisely, all exchange operator with twists, which is less, strictly less than the minimum of p1 plus p2, p3 plus p4, have suppressed three-point functions, so their contribution actually cancel out in the sum between free theory and this new function. So the stringy states was intuitive. What was not intuitive is the interplay between semi-short and, at the same time, half BPS operator. So indeed, also single particle states can be exchanged in the diagram. And when you start thinking a little bit more about that, you realize that the nice definition of the single particle state in the gauge theory is as those states, phi, which are orthogonal to all multitrace operators. Okay? So in particular, this phi won't be just the half BPS operator, but will get an admixture, which is 1 over n. So that means a full function of n, which is correct in the half BPS operator. Okay? So the green box here is a little bit complicated to explain. It requires to know the knowledge of multiple recombination. So I won't go much into that detail. I'm happy to discuss afterwards. But about the other statement, I can make a nice example. So here I'm considering for you the four-point function of half BPS operator, calligraphic O, which charge 2, 2, 4, and 4. So as explained before, this is free theory, so I draw the diagram, and then to each diagram I need also to compute the associated big contraction. So computing a big contraction will spit out a function of n, which I've done for you. So there are six types of topologies. And on the bottom box, this is what the result for the half BPS free theory, for the correlation function of half BPS operator in free theory. Now, at twist 2, there is only one operator that I can build, twist 2. At twist 3, the same. But at twist 4, there are two operators that I can consider. One is just trace phi to the 4, and the other is just trace phi squared, trace phi squared. Okay? These are protected operators, so I can put one on top of the other. Okay? And the claim is that the right single particle operator at twist 4 is the one which is orthogonal to trace phi squared squared. So in fact, that will fix this constant here by orthogonality. And what I have to do again is compute in free theory now the four-point function of this phi 2, phi 2, phi 4, phi 4. And then what happens is very nice. So the big contraction gives you a nicer result, which is fully factorized, and actually vanishes in all cases in which I cannot build that operator. So if I have gauge group with n equal 1, n equal 2, n equal 3. Okay? And then two diagrams have a zero contribution. So after doing all the big contraction, the net result is zero. And this, in fact, explains some controversy about the supergravity computation, because 2244 is a case that was computed directly in supergravity, and it was noticed that the full computation at the end of the day didn't give just free theory. But the catch, of course, is that in supergravity, nobody told you which free theory you should get. So that is not just the free theory of half BPS operator, but it's the free theory of single particle operator in the gauge theory. And in fact, this definition of the basis nicely takes into account all this admixture of multitrace operator at order 1 over n, 1 over n squared, etc. Now, let me make a more precise consideration about the spectrum of the theory. I told you that we have these long operators that have a quite anomalous dimension. Now I'm telling you more. I can precisely count the number of operators that are exchanged for given twist and SU4 labels. The generic structure is always that there are going to be two single particle operators on the left and the right, okay, of charge P and Q, and then in the middle I can insert derivatives that give me spin, or the Laplacian operator, which also has twist. The Laplacian operator can have some power, and the maximum power is just given by t minus p minus q. So when little t, for example, is p plus q, I have no box, and this is the example I gave you schematically before. Now, to count the space of operators may be a little bit involved, so let me do it through an example. Let's consider the example of the SU4 channel 040 and twist 12. Okay. Now, I told you before, and I insist quite a lot, that there is certainly a four-point function in which this twist 12 operator is exchanged, and that is the one in which max p1 plus p2, p3 plus p4 is 12. Even simpler, when p1 is equal to p3, p2 is equal to p4, so this is just the 666 operator, the 666 correlation function. Then I have a non-trivial SU4 channel, so I can also unbalance a little bit the external charges. But they always have to sum to 12, so I have 5 plus 7 and 4 plus 8. So this number 3, so I have three boxes here, is counted by this multiplicity mu, which is given in terms of the twist, which is just given in terms of the SU4 content, ABA. And now I also need to consider all correlation function such that a twister operator is above their threshold. So that means that it's exchanged and it was exchanged a lot before. So the minimum twist that I can consider as an external operator is 2. And then I have SU for channel 040. So 6 is 2 plus 4. So I have indeed a 2-6-2-6 correlator in the first diagonal. And then in order to go from 2-6 to 4-8, in the middle is 3-7. So I have 3 correlators for each box. And 3 is the number which is counted by this thing in the parentheses. And once I have understood all the labels that give me the correlators along the diagonal, these are essentially the pairs PQ that label all the operators of the theory. Okay? And now, to the space of the operator, I just associate this matrix, which is built out of the tensor product of all the pairs. Now, to this matrix, I can associate 2 pieces of data. I told you that we have disconnected free theory in which the long operators are first exchanged, because they have order 1 3-point function. And then Leonardo Xinan construct a new function, 3-level function. So I consider the leading discontinuity of the function, the log u, where the anomalous dimension was appearing. And in fact, since the OPE is symmetric under simultaneous exchange of the pairs 1, 2, and 3, 4, this matrix is symmetric as well. So the 2 pieces of data can be nicely rewritten in terms of matrix multiplication. So this disconnected free theory will give me a matrix A, which is just given by the matrix multiplication of 3-point couplings. And then the log U term of the function of Leonardo and Xinan will just give me the matrix of anomalous dimension sandwiched between, again, the matrices of 3-point functions. And again, I extract this data from doing the superconformal partial wave expansion as I explained before. So this is the place in which I need the knowledge of the superconformal blocks. Now, there is a very cool observation that we made in the 2017. If you count the number of 3-point functions that you need, those are those of a matrix, square matrix, with dimension the number of operators of the theory. And then I also need to consider the number of anomalous dimension. And so in this number is precisely the number of independent entries of the matrix A and M, okay? Since those are symmetric. Actually, A is not just symmetric, it's also diagonal, because if I go back to this matrix, for example, the only disconnected diagrams appears on the diagonal. For all the other correlators which are in position which is off diagonal, there is no disconnected diagram I can consider. So at n equal to infinity, the contribution is 0. That means that the matrix A is diagonal. Instead, the matrix M is a full matrix, but it's symmetric. So what happens here is that I can reduce the problem of finding the anomalous dimension to an algebraic problem of finding the eigenvalue of an auxiliary matrix. We studied a little bit these matrices, and then we ended up with a general solution for the eigenvalues. Then in terms of a general solution for the anomalous dimension, which I'm writing here. The anomalous dimension is always a rational function of twist and spin. It has 8 factors in the numerators. 4 factors only depends on twist, and then other 4 factors depends on twist plus spin. And then in the denominator, there are 6 factors. The factors in the numerator don't depend on the label of the operator, so they are universal, given twist and spin and SU for channel. Instead, the denominator depends non-trivially on the labels of the operator P and Q, okay? But notice it only depends on one label of the operator, P, and not Q, for example, in the way it's written. This means that for given P, as I vary Q, I will get the same anomalous dimension, and meaning that this anomalous dimension, some of them will be degenerate. Now you can say, okay, what's the big deal? This is a nice formula. So let me show you an example. Here I copy-paste from my Mathematica notebook the 0 to 0 channel even spin twist 8. So if you count again as before the matrix of operators that you need to consider, that is 4 by 4. So the matrix is full, since the matrix M was full. It's not particularly illuminating. You see in the numerator there are non-factorizable polynomials. Okay? There are square roots. Nevertheless, what happens is that when you compute the eigenvalue of this function, they are beautifully rational function of the spin. And when the spin is large, they always go as 1 over L squared, as large spin perturbation would predict. Now, this is just crazy. This matrix looks, after all, not relatively simple. When you increase the twist, this matrix becomes even crazier. But the magic is that it always happens that the anomalous dimensions are beautifully rational functions. So when this happens on your desktop, you can just take a day of vacation and come back the next day. Because even though this matrix is crazy complicated, apart from having a rational function in spin as a solution, there are also degeneracies. So this inspired Simon Carouat in a beautiful paper, which I suggest everybody to read, this 1800, to explain these degeneracies invoking some accidental symmetry in 10 dimensions. Okay? And essentially his argument is that these matrices are secretly related to group theory of conformal group in 10 dimensions. And that's why I can end up with the degenerate eigenvalues. But in the channels in which I don't have degeneracies, then I can complete do incomplete unmixing, meaning that the auxiliary problem will spit out different eigenvalues, meaning that for each eigenvalues, so for each anomalous dimension, I have a vector in the space of operators, and that vector is going to give me the three-point function. So when I don't have mixing, then, and this happens in the 0-0 channel and the 0-1-0 channel, then I can do a complete unmixing, so finding all the CFT data that I want, which was the three-point function and the anomalous dimension. So when I have that, then I can use them to go one step farther in the expansion in 1 over n squared. So before I had the term which was 1 over n squared, log u, now the OPE will predict a little bit of the 1 over n to the fourth function. But before I move to that, let me ask whether there are questions on this part of the talk, since we will now switch a little bit of gear.
Yes, sorry. Can you just explain how you did this analytic diagonalization of these matrices?
Yes, so essentially, since the matrix A, okay, is diagonal, I can just, instead of considering C, I can normalize the C by the square root of the matrix A, because it's diagonal. Then the normalized matrix that I can call C tilde, they are such that C tilde transpose equal to 1. Okay? So this matrix C tilde, they are orthonormal. And instead of the matrix M, I will consider a matrix M, which is essentially C anomalous dimension C tilde. Okay? So this means that I will construct out of calligraphic M, just multiplying from the right and from the left with square root of A, another matrix, which is this one that I'm showing you in the next slide. Okay? That's why there are square root appearing. And now, this is an algebraic problem, because here I have a matrix M, which is what I computed, but I know from the CFT data that this is given in terms of orthogonal matrices sandwiching a diagonal matrix of anomalous dimension. So the eigenvalue of M will give me the anomalous dimension. Now, a technical detail, mathematics cannot compute the eigenfunction of this matrix as function of L. So what you do is you solve the eigenvalues for a lot of values of L, and then you make an ansatz and you find this always this nice rational function. Does it answer that? Okay, so at this point of the talk, what we have done, we have we have extracted from the function of Leonardo and disconnected free theory all the data that I need to compute at order 1 over n to the fourth the double discontinuity of the function. Okay? Double discontinuity will just mean log square u, and then here the log square u is predicted by the CFT to be this sum. And in this sum, I just computed what are the c's and the anomalous dimension. Notice that now we are at order 1 over n to the fourth, so it appears the anomalous dimension squared. So I could not obtain this if I just knew the unmixed CFT data. I really need to unmix and then square the anomalous dimension and sandwich them with the three-point function. So this is a sum. Is a sum in what? So for each twist and spin, here I have the conformal block, which is an analytic series in U and 1 minus V. So when I do this sum, this is an analytic series in U 1 minus V with coefficient for each monomial in the series, which now depend non-trivially on the CFT data. Okay? The nice way to resum this is using not the cross ratio U and V, but the variable, symmetrized variable X and X bar. And in fact, you can resum this function here in terms of polylogs. The price you pay is that you introduce a non-trivial denominator, 1 over x minus x bar to the power 14 for the case of 2, 2, 2, 2. And then this calligraphic p are just some polynomials in x1 and x bar. The non-trivial dependence, the fact that we are able to resum it is given by the non-triviality of the polylogs. And here you need at most Li2 as a polylog. But pay attention that this function was analytic in U and 1 minus V, then it's also analytic in x, x bar, okay? And here there is a denominator x minus x bar to the 14. So in fact, this it's a spurious denominator, okay? It's there, but when a series expands, this full function has no poles at x equal to x bar, okay? In fact, the polynomial, which are in x, x bar, are such that combined with the transcendental function, they give you precisely 14 zeros at when x is equal to x bar.
So, but this literally the result of the sum, or you added some sum to obtain some property of the
sum? This is literally the result of the sum.
The result of the sum?
Yes. I'm not telling you what are the polynomials in the slide, but they are written out in the. Now, this now becomes a very simple, well, a well-defined problem for the analytic bootstrap, because we have a little bit of a function. So we want to construct a function such that transform rightly under crossing. It has a double discontinuity log square u, which is what we just found from the CFT data. And then this function, the full function now, should not have a spurious pole, okay? Now, the space of a transcendental function in which I could eventually decompose this function that I'm seeking are called single-valued HPL, were introduced time ago by Brown. Single-valued HPL, you can think of at the end of the day as a particular name for a specific type of Feynman diagram, or Witten diagram if you want. So essentially what I'm doing with the analytic bootstrap will be to make an ansatz in which I have in the numerator polynomials and single variable HPL, and then in the denominator I have x minus x bar to the power 15. So then what I will do will be to match this ansatz with the double discontinuity that I constructed, impose crossing and cancellation of spurious pole. Now let me make a little bit of more comment of the ansatz. So the function that Leonardo and Xinan constructed, which I hope is relatively simple to understand, when I expel it out in the variable x, x bar, becomes at most a function in which the single variable HPL that I need have transcendental content up to weight 2 antisymmetric, okay? So a small set of transcendental function. But the double discontinuity here, and I'm counting the transcendental weight just by the number of logs, or Li. Here it's 4, because I have a log square, and then here at most I have Li2. In fact, the transcendental content of the double discontinuity is weight 4, weight 3, and weight 2. Weight 2 will be just given by log square times this P1, okay? So when I've read the ansatz, in terms of the single-valued HPL, and I start crossing, then I impose, as I said, cancellation of spurious pole, and then I match the double discontinuity. I find what are, in the end of the day, the class of transcendental function that I can the 1 over n to the fourth loop result needs. And quite surprisingly, since the transcendental function comes in a basis, so I could use every base I want, the function that we constructed is nicely rewritten a little bit in terms of a class of function that was known quite ago called the ladder diagrams. Okay? So essentially, the function that Leonardo and Xinan constructed boils down to the box function in perturbation theory, so a ladder diagram of degree 1, which almost has a log and then LA1. Okay? Here instead, we find the ladder diagram of weight 2, which is known as the double box. But notice that, perhaps you don't know, but I'll tell you that the space of a single valued HPL up to weight 4 is bigger. So this problem could have been even worse. But as for the case of the anomalous dimension, it doesn't. It's still as nice as the anomalous dimension problem. And uplift the function of Leonardo, which is a transcendental function up to weight 2 antisymmetric, up to a transcendental function up to weight 4 antisymmetric. Okay? And the only content I need at the end of the day is just a double box, so a weight 4 antisymmetric function that was known from the 80s. Okay?
What are the spurious poles?
The spurious poles are precisely this in x equal to x bar. Because when I have here the basis of transcendental, I multiply by polynomials, then what happens is that I match, so some polynomials will be fixed. But now I have a log square u, and then all this function here, sorry, if you notice, they have log square and log and analytic. So the full function will still have poles unless I impose in the free coefficient that there are no poles when x is equal to x bar. So perhaps let me say this better. The double discontinuity here, when I log square u is outside, has no poles in x is equal to x bar. But now I'm going to consider a function in which the log square u is again part of it. Okay, and it's bigger. So that function will have spurious pole when x is equal to x bar unless I impose that they cancel. And when I do, and I impose the cancellation, what happens is that I'm able to fix all this coefficient function A, which were just given in terms of free coefficient. Okay. So in the end, there are 15 unknown coefficient function.
At the crossing, you just
yes, in the end you can massage the initial ansatz to a crossing symmetric ansatz for given weight. So weight, this is the first line is weight 4, the second line is weight 3, third line is weight 2, and then this is essentially a function like the one that Leonardo and Xinan constructed. So again, we could do this for the 2-2-2-2 correlator. So we have a prediction for the 1 over n to the fourth superconformal primary in the graviton multiplet of type 2B supergravity. And we also did it for the correlator in which I have the stress tensor multiplet and a first Kaluza-Klein multiplet coming from the S5. So this is beyond consistent truncation in supergravity. This is really the we are really probing the 10-dimensional type 2B supergravity on ADS5 times S5. And we could do this just using the CFT data. So these are prediction again for a quantum gravity at the 1 over n to the 4th. If someone comes with a technology and is able to handle all the mess of supergravity when it's expanded out as an effective Lagrangian, then eventually should come back to our result. Indication that this result is right, even though I'm not showing you the coefficient function here, but they're in the papers, is that the amount of free coefficient that I'm left with boil 1 to 1. Only one free coefficient I'm left with. And now if you see what that free coefficient is multiplying, that free coefficient is multiplying the same function that was found time ago by Gonsalves, studying the terms r to the fourth, so alpha prime cube r to the fourth correction to supergravity. So our ambiguity, so the free coefficient that we are left with after we bake our function, is again the same function that appears in string theory. So this is an indication that somehow we are doing something right. But since we have now a 1 over n to the 4 function, we can go back to the study of the anomalous dimension, and we can find the anomalous dimension in the case in which there is only one operator that is exchanged, and that is the twist 4 operator in the singlet channel. And in fact, we find the anomalous dimension for the long operator at twist 4 at order 1 over n to the 4th. And incredibly, the ambiguity that I'm calling here alpha, so that I help the imagination of alpha prime of string theory, only appears as spin 0. Okay? And in fact, this is consistent with the prediction of spin 0, so string theory should only modify the spectrum of supergravity gravity slowly, adding correction to a few spins at once. So in these cases, we studied 2, 2, 2, 2 as a correlation function, so the ambiguity comes only as spin 0, any twist. And as large spin perturbation theory also suggests, whenever spin is bigger or equal than 2, I always get a rational function of the spin as the anomalous dimension. So we did this for the 2 to 2 correlator, and also we did this for the 2 to 3 correlator. And again, notice that the anomalous dimension, considering that this function is a little bit involved, even though not so much, they're very nice and simple. Okay? In fact, they also enjoy kind of a symmetry. If you notice here, there is a 12 plus 7, and then all the numbers here are symmetric respect to 7 half. So this is a further indication that in the end of the day, there is even more non-triviality in the function that we constructed. And we hope in the future that we can boil down these ansatz to a very nice Mellin form, as it was the case for the function of Leonard and Xina. Okay. So summarizing what we've done, we have obtained the one-loop supergravity recorrection for the superconformal primary in the supermultiplet of the stress or the graviton from consistency of the OPE, okay, and using techniques from the analytic bootstrap, after solving the mixing problem and resumming the double discontinuity. So now, this problem can be pushed a little bit more. In fact, in the very same paper that I mentioned before by Simon, Carwat, and his student Strin, he was able to obtain a whole loop leading discontinuity formula for any charge. In the same way, Leonardo has a formula for three-level for any arrangement of external charges, for external single charges of external single particle states. Here, Simon has a formula for the leading discontinuity considering any range of external charges. So this is not the full correlator, but again, is a bit of it. Okay, the maximum log that you can have in the function that is predicted. So in principle, one could explore, using the same ansatz that I showed you before, more different charges correlators, and in the end, explore the full quantumness of ADS5 times S5 at one loop. Given that, it would be very interesting to understand what's the fate of the accidental 10D symmetry, whether that is just an accidental symmetry, as at the moment we are understanding, or whether there is something more, okay? Maybe it's again something coming secretly from integrability. This we don't know yet. And again, the smart argument that allowed Leonard and Xinan to find their function should also apply to the at one loop once we Mellinize the one loop answer. An indication on that were recently discovered by Aldine in the first year paper. Essentially, Simon in this same paper exhausted what happens at three level. So the flat space limit of the three level amplitude is very simple. It's just, in terms of Mandelstam variable, it's just 1 over S times T times U. Incredibly simple. But on one loop, we don't know. Okay. The flat space limit is very much important because builds a connection just with the string theory directly in 10 dimension, and especially worksheet computation that were done in the past by Michael Green and collaborators in these very nice papers. And on top of that, one could start adding, as I mentioned at a certain point in the talk, stringy correction. So all the tower of stringy states that should be added to the 1 over n expansion of supergravity. The problem here is a little bit simpler because this correction only comes at finite spin. infinite twist but finite spin. Instead, we had a function with infinite spin and infinite twist. And a very nice paper has been written, and I think there will come out other other nice paper by Aldai and collaborators. So this is pretty much the setup and what has been achieved until today. And I think there will be more to come. And for the moment, let me thank you for the attention.
So if you take one of these kinds of external labs,
yes.
Does it have any meaning in the flat space spirit?
No, those are the disconnected diagrams. Yes, they are the same as the Witten diagrams. Okay, but the connected diagrams in free theory, they don't have directly a meaning in supergravity. They just come because of the partial non-renormalization theorem that tells you that you can write the correlators free theory, the standard free theory of n equal 4, plus a truly dynamical function. So in fact, in the very beginning of this computation, the ones that were done in supergravity, free theory, connected free theory was not there. We're just coming out a little bit of the Witten diagram. So the Witten diagram is giving you a little bit of free theory and a little bit of non-trivial function, which means a function with non-trivial log u discontinuities. And the Witten diagram secretly is giving you the precise amount of free theory and log u such that in the end of the day there are stringy states cancellation and other cancellation that happen between free theory. And so essentially supergravity is a little bit, everything is mixed in the Witten diagram. There is no clear distinction.
Questions. I had one small question.
Yes.
You use this, this, for a given P, that you only include some function up to transcendental way and something.
Yes.
So where this is a bit, just for bootstrapper, this is a bit of a confusing hypothesis. So can you give some some argument why it should be this way?
Yes. So. I mean, as long, so this part of the function is predicted, okay? So it has a log square u, and this is a function that we predict by data at previous order in 1 over n squared, and this is exact, okay? Now, from here to the ansatz, yes, I'm just considering a transcendental function which have maximum weight that can appear here times log. And here the maximum weight that appears is weight 4. I could have added a bigger function, but that bigger function wouldn't be fixed as it happens here. It's possible that the true computation gives a slightly different function. Nevertheless, our function should be included in what's the true computation coming from supergravity. So the assumption of, so we added the all weight for function, which are bigger than the ones that at the end are getting fixed. So the fact that we were able to write things in terms of known ladder diagram function, which shows up in a lot of places and not in integrability, was an indication that somehow this was the right way to.
If there's no more questions, then let's make Francesco in.